Welcome to Reading the Grid with Erin and Ina. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. In the animated heart of Mexico City, the weekend belonged to Lando Norris. From pole at the high-altitude Autódromo Hermanos Rodríguez to the final white checkered flag, Norris dominated in style, cruising past rivals and leaving no doubt. He claimed victory ahead of Charles Leclerc in P2 and Max Verstappen in P3, vaulting into the championship lead just 1 point ahead of teammate Oscar Piastri and 36 points ahead of Max Verstappen. But in a twist of local drama, even after delivering one of the cleanest drives of the weekend, Norris found himself serenaded with boos during his post-race interview and again on the podium.
Meanwhile, Ferrari locked out P2, P3 in qualifying as the stadium roared with waves of Mexican flags. But the day of the race story changed. Leclerc held on to P2 while Lewis Hamilton, after qualifying P3, ended up in P8, following a controversial penalty that echoed louder than the mariachis, and which we will unpack later in the episode. Piastri battled back from a disappointing qualifying to a recovery P5, but the weekend's rhythm slipped away in this city that knows how to party and isn't afraid to punish mistakes.
The rookies brought fresh spirit to Mexico's celebration of motorsport. In FP1, in which 9 rookies took part, Arvid Lindblad, substituting for Verstappen, set the pace and outperformed Yuki Tsunoda. In the race, Oliver Bierman, who did FP1 session for Haas last year, lit up the weekend with his first P4, staking a claim among the stars as trumpets flares at stars. Among the stars as trumpet flares burst around the grandstands. Kimi Antonelli edged past senior teammate George Russell, though not without team orders and a lot of dramatic radio messages. Gabriel Bortoleto snagged points too, reinforcing that Mexico City has become F1's ultimate fiesta, where engines meet folk art, fans wave marigolds, and every lap has flavor. The sporadic raw voice team radio burst from Alexander Albon, Liam Lawson, and George Russell added to the drama, underscoring that in this Grand Prix, the championship isn't just about speed, it's about savoring the moment. Ina, I have a feeling I know who the answer to this question is going to be, but who won your heart in Mexico City this weekend?
Well, I could try to surprise you, but this is no surprise. Oliver Bearman, he achieved the highest position that has ever earned in the race, P4, and which is more impressive that he came from qualifying P10, although he started P9, and for a good part of the race, he was running in P3 after his daring and opportunistic overtake on Max Verstappen after his tussle with Hamilton and Russell on lap 6. And I thought that podium would be very much within his grasp. But then the drivers behind him, Antonelli, Russell, Piastri, and Hamilton, decided to go for a two-stop, and Haas chose to protect their short P4 instead of risking it all for a podium. And can we just talk about teams choosing a two-stop strategy? I'm not sure if it was the right call, because I've always feel that when you give up track position, you never know what's going to happen. A long pit stop, and we'll get to some of most egregious pit stops I've ever seen in this race, could delay proceedings. You never know how the tires are going to hold up towards the end of the race. So the one thing you can be sure of, that you gave track position. And at the point where these 4 drivers, or actually 5, including Bearman, decided to switch tires, Max already did his one stop, and he was running in P8 on soft tires, which did end up being the preferred tire of the race. And everyone in front of him was in the mediums, since they had different strategies. So it is possible he could have passed 4 cars and still end up in 3rd. But I don't think it would have been as easy, because he would have to deal with dirty air, since this is not an easy track to overtake. However, with four cars pitting in front of him, he moved into P3 position without any objection, any fight, and this allowed him to get as close to P2 as he could. Thus, there's no guarantee that the pace he showed at the end of the race would have been there if he had to clear that many cars, since, except for McLaren, every car struggles in constant dirty air. So, overall, I do think Haas did the right thing, as Behrmann would not have been able to withstand Verstappen if all the cars between them pitted, and if he would have been worse off trying to fend off Piastri for P4 on old medium tires. I just wish the other cars were not so reactive because they had P3 without any fight, and except for Piastri, further than they did when they were on medium tires. But back to Oliver Behrmann. He justified the faith of the team and us that he had the ability to do what he did. And his celebrations afterwards were very endearing. He got emotional seeing his father and girlfriend get emotional. And it was so funny because it was in the middle of the interview and you could just see him get emotional. And then they showed his girlfriend hysterically crying. Not sure what that was about. So another good news for Ollie Bearman is that he will have two penalty points taken off his license before the race in Brazil. So he will be in less danger of getting a race ban in the near future. And I also need to mention that the change in demeanor that Ayo Komatsu showed was very good to see. He was exuberant. It was very clear that these moments of happiness had to be celebrated as they experience more disappointments than happy moments. Aaron, who won your heart?
Well, it was not Lance Stroll.
Really, his spin at the first lab did not do it for you this time.
That did not do it for me. Actually, outside of Oliver Bierman, I really don't know who you pick for this one because that was such a phenomenal performance. Aside from Bierman, Lando had the best weekend. Patrick was exuberant and kept telling all of us, ha ha ha, my driver won, yours did not.
Fair. That's true.
Tommy had tears. He could have shed them with Ollie's dad and girlfriend, although it was more because Max only came in third.
Started in fifth. I thought he did a good job as well.
Well, yeah, he did great. I
Well,
always.
we're going to get to my issues with his drive, but in terms of movement, that was
There
a
were
positive.
plenty of issues with his drive, none of which my 5-year-old would really understand. But, he was not thrilled his younger brother's driver got the bigger trophy than him. So, to sum that one up.
Well, I just want to say, in terms of Oliver Behrmann, one funny thing is that we didn't mention in our last episode is that in Austin, apparently there was a tussle between Oliver Behrmann and Yuki Tsunoda.
Oh.
And Behrmann felt that Tsunoda basically pushed him off or impeded him. I don't know. To tell you the truth, I don't remember it
I
from
don't
the.
remember seeing anything.
Right. So if I missed it, sorry. But I know Behrmann could not let that go. And he kept talking about it before they started racing this weekend, and one of his thing was, I mean, he reminded me so much of George Russell, and that's not a compliment.
No.
And he was saying that if you think about the children, what are we teaching them about how to drive? And I'm thinking, Max is sh like, this is, I mean, I don't think it applies to you, but it totally applies about Max, because what is he teaching your 5-year-old about driving in the most reckless way possible and still getting ahead?
Yeah, I am not quite sure about those life lessons coming from Verstappen,
But
but
I also don't feel it's the job of Formula One to educate the children. So every time they
oh
bring up the
God, no.
children, I just actually it's so funny because we're going to get into George
Russell and
Russell's
his, yes, I hope so.
radio messages. I'm surprised the children didn't come on because he was throwing everything that he could possibly
Well, and for
throw.
anyone new to F1 in 2024, Russell had an epic rant against Verstappen and brought the children into it. You can Google it or go down the Reddit rabbit hole, but I think it's easier to talk about who broke my heart than who won my heart in Mexico. Although I will say I was so excited after watching qualifying. I thought that was one of, I feel like going from Austin to Mexico City has just been like this momentum of excitement between practices and qualifying. I was so excited to see, obviously, Ferrari lock out 2 and 3, and was so hopeful for Hamilton. So I feel like whoever is their current race director was channeling a little Michael Massey in this race. So I think you and I are going to be pretty aligned when we talk about the FIA and the stewards really being on the short end of my weekend.
I agree because the stewards broke my heart.
Ugh.
And I would have to say it's probably not the worst race for stewardship, but it is another race where penalties were inconsistently applied, things were done that made no sense. But before we get into all of that, I just want to mention that I reviewed the documents on the FIA website, and they showed the scrutineering performed on various cars after the race. Now, just to be clear, this is the scrutineering that's done like spot checks on select cars, not on the checks that are done on all cars. So can you guess the car that did not get any spot checks?
I am going to either go with a Lando Norris or Max Verstappen.
Oh no, Lando got spot checked. It was Max
Oh.
Verstappen. And it's interesting because there were some samples that were taken from like six cars, other samples that were taken for three cars, a few samples from individual cars.
Guarantee you Ferrari had to be in the mix.
Well, I was gonna say, listen to my next second question. Can you guess the car that got the most spot checks?
Ferrari. I saw an article
Which
that talked
one?
probably Hamilton.
Yes. So it's hilarious because they just mentioned the car number, so you really have to know your car numbers. And oh my God, again, I didn't really do like, okay, let's look at this car. I just knew notice 44, 44, 44, 44, 44 is Lewis's number. So 44 just went on down the list. And for the spot checks where only one car was checked, it was primarily car 44. So that just gives you kind of a overall picture. I mean, Leclerc's car was checked, but not as much as Lewis's.
No, it frustrates me. I saw an article that said Ferrari is not in good standing or on, which clearly, based on China and some of the other checks that have happened throughout the year, which is probably why the FIA has been harder on them as a team in general.
Fair. So even if we put aside Lewis Hamilton's penalty, which technically seemed to be deserved because he did leave the track and rejoined ahead and did not give the position back.
Well,
However,
Leclerc should have given him the
hold
position
on.
back after turn one.
And he did. He gave position to Norris. So my point is, because at the time that Lewis rejoined, Oliver Bearman passed Max. So I'm not saying Lewis had to give up position to Bearman and Max, but I bet you if he gave the position to Bearman, he would not be penalized. Because as you mentioned, Leclerc should have given the position back to Norris and Lewis. He
Lewis.
only gave back the position to Norris. He was not penalized. Max Verstappen, I mean, in George's mind, he should have given the position to Hamilton and Russell. He
And
only gave
Russell, of
position
course.
to Hamilton. Wasn't penalized. But just if we can stop with Max. So these are the penalties that he could have gotten. And just so everyone is on the same page,
He could have
if
gotten, should have gotten,
was not
did
even
not
investigated
get,
for,
which
that's
is
the,
insane.
yeah. And one of them, Lewis was investigated and it was really should have been Max's fault. But if you remember last year, Max got two 10-second penalties, one which was definitely deserved, and one could have been a punishment for constantly pushing Norris off the road over the course of the season. One of the stewards at that race, so Mexico 2024, was Johnny Herbert, who was also a vocal Max Verstappen critic. Although I agreed with everything he said, because his main point was that Max is too good of a driver to drive the way he does. And ultimately, Johnny Herbert parted ways with FIA due to perceived conflict of interest. Thus, the fact that during this weekend's race, the stewards kept not wanting to investigate Max's penalties, or sorry, Max's questionable moves that could have been penalties, could be seen as an attempt to correct what was done last year, even though I thought it was totally within
I
the rules.
thought last year was fair.
Oh my God. Well, one penalty was absolutely deserved. Like he was
Yes.
egregious. But one penalty, the thing is, even if you think it's deserved, the whole year he never got a penalty for that move. And the only time he got that penalty was in Mexico. So that's why I would say it's questionable. But these are the penalties he should have been investigated for. We're not even talking
Okay.
about. So one is turn one, going off track and gaining an advantage. There was no further action, and I think it was because he gave the place to Hamilton. There was a collision with Hamilton. That's lap six, because lap six was a gift. It was investigated as Hamilton causing the collision when it was obviously Max. There was running Hamilton off the track. And I don't know if, based on the current rule, because it means who was ahead in the apex, and I could never
Right.
figure that out, but it should have been investigated. It wasn't even investigated. The one that I think he should have gotten was leaving the track and gaining a position before the turn where Lewis did the same. That should have been investigated.
Well, if you
And that's.
investigate it for Lewis, they should have investigated it for Max.
No, but this. So my point is, that's just actually one thing. I wish actually at that time, Lewis didn't try a move on him. Because I bet you if Lewis didn't make the move right away, Ferrari would have started yelling that, hey, you have to investigate because Max left the track and rejoined and didn't give a position back. And Max would have either gotten a penalty or had to give a position back. So I think the fact that Lewis thought, okay, that's fine, I'll do the same thing, that's what got him in the end. Again, not necessarily on Lewis, but that's like one thing I think that could have been in his favor. And finally, so when he finally got close to Leclerc and there was a double yellow for Carlos Sainz's crash, this should have been investigated. And I've seen commentary that said that, oh, maybe he slowed down a little and Leclerc slowed down a lot. I have a feeling maybe that's true, but it should have been investigated because Leclerc definitely thought it was a penalty. And speaking of Leclerc, look, he cut the corner in turn one and he rejoined as the leader, but he gave back place to Lando. Now, should he have been given place to Lewis Hamilton? Even though he's my favorite driver, I have to say he got a lot of benefit of the doubt. I think the steward literally had a blind eye when it applied to him. He was not. So I also look at the documentation that noted who had track limits. So Max was there. Lewis was there. Guess who wasn't there? Nowhere was
Leclerc.
Leclerc there. I think they just refused to see anything wrong with anything he did. Look, it doesn't happen. I mean, he usually is very good at not getting penalties, and he has a horrible luck in so many other things. So, like, let's give him this one. Although I feel like Ferrari maybe should have told him to give up the place. And Leclerc is really good at following team orders, so he would have done it. He would
I
not
know.
like
I'm
it.
surprised the team didn't, to be honest,
They
because
also were blind. Didn't see it.
Yeah.
So finally, the virtual safety car. This
Oh,
was
yeah.
more on race control than the stewards, and I feel like they're separate entities. But the timing of virtual safety car for Sainz's crash, so just as Piastri was getting close to Bierman for P4, Max was getting close to Leclerc for P2, it definitely robbed us of exciting uninterrupted finish. But actually, this one I understand why it was done. So there was smoke coming out of Sainz's car, which forced the FIA to send the marshals to investigate a potential fire. And I know it seemed like the car was parked in an area that looked safe.
Safe.
I always gonna urge F1 to prioritize safety over exciting racing.
Well, safety, yes, especially given what happened earlier with Lawson.
Yeah, this was not shown on the broadcast, but we later learned that Liam Lawson encountered marshals after his. So he collided with Sainz. So obviously, Lawson and Sainz have a lot in common.
They've got
He
some
had to,
beef.
yeah, so he had to go into the pits, change his front wing. And at that time, there was so much debris on the track that marshals were sent out to clean it. After all the car had come by, they forgot there was one in the pits. So when Lawson came on track, there were these two marshals that he could have easily ran over because he was not going slow.
That
So
was so scary when you saw it after the fact. And even Liam, he was like, oh my God, I could have killed those guys. That's terrifying.
he definitely could have. And that's why I think they were super cautious with the virtual safety car because they did not even want the perception of this happening twice in the race. Like, I don't think those stewards would have, or a race director would have lived it down. So obviously there's also a conspiracy theory. This is cracks me up. They threw a virtual safety car because Max did not slow down for double yellows. Well, if you're not going to give out penalties, then this is what you get. Like,
Well, I was really hoping that they would have pulled the virtual safety car and let the last lap be a little more exciting.
I'm fine with how it ended up.
Well, that's because Leclerc got to hold Max off and Max got to land in his extra rare position of P3.
It was the first of the year, but the thing that I also think we both agree, we don't want him to win the championship. So this helped
No.
him,
Nope, nope,
you know,
nope,
be a
nope, nope.
little
I
further down.
just am a little bitter that Hamilton didn't get P3.
You and me both.
I
And I
would
think
really
he
have liked for him to finally land on the podium, and a 2-3 would have been pretty amazing.
I agree.
So that was tough, but not quite as tough as all of the DNFs we had. So let's read the grid and talk about the midfield performance. Williams, we just talked about Carlos Sainz and his accident. So my, how we go from winning last year to not finishing the race.
Well, remember his penalty from Austin? It
Oh
totally
yeah.
paid, well, it didn't really pay off for him, but he qualified in P7. And the thing is, if he didn't have the penalty, he wouldn't have lost in anywhere near. So he could
Right.
have avoided that whole situation.
Well, that's true.
So then
Karma.
he exactly. So he deserved that penalty.
Oh
So
yeah.
then he dropped five places. And then this is, first lap incident. The further you are in the midfield, the more things are likely to go wrong.
Yep,
And so,
you're at risk.
and then he caused damage to the pit limiter. And this is the first time I heard this term. And just to confirm, pit
What
limiter
is
is,
this?
it's a feature on a race car that
Oh.
electronically restricts the speed to the preset limit. So once you enter the pit, it literally will not allow you to go faster than whatever is set. And since it was broken, in the words of James Vowles, they allowed Carlos to do this manually. And my point is, Carlos is obviously a world-class driver, but he's never, like, the point is not to go slow. So I think so the first time he went to change tires and he speeded, I think the difference was like 2 kilometers per hour, which doesn't sound like much,
But
but
when you're in a
hey.
pit lane, yeah.
Right. So he got a 5-second penalty. So the second time he did that, he actually got into the pits fine. Like, so he controlled the speed. He got into the pits. He had the tire change. And as again, James Vowles, seriously, Toto's apologizing for Max is almost as funny as Vowles apologizing for Sainz. But this is what Vowles is like. And he had muscle memory to just push it. So he pushed it and he was like 20 kilometers. Like, the difference between the actual limit and where he went was like huge. So, of course, the stewards gave them a drive-through penalty, which is a lot harsher.
That's worse.
Yeah. And of course, at that point, what could he do? Well, what he did is he spun out and hit the barriers on lap 67, just causing the double yellows, the virtual safety car, and all the rest.
He wanted to compete with Latifi from 21.
Oh my God, Latifi was brought up so many times this weekend. It's not even funny. Well, then there's, of course, Alex Albon. He had a really bad weekend. He went
Horrible
out of.
weekend. I needed him to have a good weekend. When is he going to have a good weekend, Ina?
Well, we'll get to that, but just
Ugh.
to summarize his weekend. So he went out in
Phew.
Q1, which is awful, and he was the beneficiary of the worst strategy in the race. And this is, I put so much in Williams. He started on hards. Now, if you remember,
Makes no sense to me.
do you know that he also started on hards in Austin? So
Yeah.
that didn't work. So they thought, hey,
Let's
let's
try it
try it in
again.
Mexico. Like,
The
what
higher
kind of.
altitude is going to help with the hard tire. What did they think?
Plus, like both in Austin and Mexico, I mean, it was a different compound, but it was also like a s two steps below the medium. So you knew this was
No.
never going to be a preferred tire.
No, it's going to be
What were
terrible.
they So he was never in the cards for
Ugh.
points. So it's really, but interesting thing that I read about his lack of form is the one thing he and Piastri share is that they both crashed in Baku to the point where their chassis had to be changed, and
Oh.
neither have been the same since. So I don't know what that means. Like, it's technically they should have gotten a new chassis because a lot of the speculation is like, what if their chassis is damaged? I'm like, but they've replaced the chassis. And I wouldn't put it past Williams not to have a brand new one. So it could have been like cobbled with parts. So it's not exactly the
Refurb,
same.
yeah.
But with Piastri, that can be the reason. So yeah, but it's just an interesting coincidence that both of their forms declined significantly after their crashes in Baku.
That's not good.
Nope.
Very concerning. All right. Well, Hajar Racing Bulls. We talked a little bit about Liam almost taking out some marshals. How did our other favorite rookie do?
Well, as terms of qualifying goes, not bad. Although he qualified P9, sorry, in P8. He was actually not happy because if you remember, and this was the shocking statistic of qualifying, in Q1 he was P1.
I did see that.
So I thought, like, ooh, don't sleep on Hadjar in qualifying. You never know where he's going to end up. And I mean, P9 is nothing to sneeze at, but I kind of expected a little more. And I don't know what happened to him during the race. And I still have a hard time believing that not only Bortoleto managed to get ahead of him, although their wheel-to-wheel was exciting and probably reminiscent of when they were in F2 and fighting for the championship, which, of course, Bortoleto won. But then he was completely, like, sliding down. Who didn't pass him? Lance Stroll. Lance Stroll was the only one who didn't pass him because Tsunoda passed him. Albon passed
Was there
him.
something going on with the car that we just don't know about?
I haven't heard anything. I just think he claimed the strategy was bad. But it was the same strategy that everyone else did. So I don't know. I just know, like, probably the only thing that makes him feel better is that Lawson didn't make it out of Q2. And also, there was the first car to DNF. So, yay.
Yeah, that was a quick D. That
Victory.
was a quick out.
And, like, when I saw it, I was like, well, he's now never winning Aaron's heart. So,
Nope.
might as well leave the race.
Exactly. I don't think Lawson stood a chance, but he did make it into Q2, right?
He did, but it was so weird because he I forgot where he was when he did his lap, but then his lap time was deleted and he never set a lap time. And I could understand that because by when he set his first lap time, I think he had like 6 minutes to do another one. So the fact that they kept showing no time, no time, I was found very perplexing. Like, what happened? Why couldn't you do a second flying lap that counted?
Yeah, I don't know. I never saw anything come out about that afterwards.
I mean, nobody's really that interested, but I'm just saying
I mean,
it's
it
an
would have to be a
interesting
boring weekend for that to
view.
be a hot news story and too much excitement happened.
I agree.
Well, we talked about the other one who is not wooing or winning my heart. Aston Martin had a terrible weekend.
Oh my God. I mean,
Poor Alonso.
we kind of expected from Lance Stroll, but Alonso,
Oh,
like,
I felt so bad when they retired him.
well, he retired, but then when you hear that he was asked to switch with Lance Stroll, he turned off his radio. Sorry, he was asked to switch with Lance Stroll. He turned off his radio, went into the pits, and retired the car. Hilariously, he then did an interview where he said he had brake issues. But Aaron, out of the last 8 Mexico Grand Prix in which Alonso participated, how many did he finish?
Five.
You are so optimistic. He only finished 3.
Okay, then I heard the stat wrong when I was listening to it. I thought he was retired from three
He
and
was
finished
retired.
five. Okay,
He
so
never finished 5. He only finished 3, but he also retired for the last 3
yikes.
Mexico
Okay.
Grand Prix. So obviously, this is not the
Oh,
track for Aston Martin. But actually,
no.
if it's 8 years, well, it could be more because there was, I think, at least 1 year that he didn't participate. He was in different teams.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So,
Oof.
like, this is not his track, obviously. Yeah, and, Lance did Lance thing. And the only thing I can think of, he finished ahead of Alpine. Yay!
What a stat. What a stat. We do have to celebrate Haas. I love seeing their champagne little celebration in the pit with Bierman afterwards.
Well, I also love that Esteban Ocon was so proud of Bierman, and he was in a good mood because he finally
He
made it
made
into
it
the
into the
points.
points. Yes, both. What a track for Haas.
Yeah, and he started in P11, so he qualified P12, but thanks to Carlos Sainz, he started P11th and he ended up in P9, which is good progression.
He moved
And
up. Good for him.
as we predicted, the closer he gets to Brazil, the more his form comes alive.
He's just getting ready. No, it was good. I don't know where I saw this, but I thought I saw something that said Oliver Bierman had the best finish for Haas since Nico Hülkenberg in 2018.
That makes sense. Although I thought, the definitely first P4 was from Romain Grosjean. So it must have been
No,
before
maybe it
Nico.
was Grosjean. Sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Grosjean in 2018.
It's, but I don't remember the
Because I think
year. Yeah.
Hülkenberg.
Yeah, 2018, the Hülkenberg was in Renault.
That's right. So it was Grosjean. Sorry. So Grosjean had P4 in 2018 at Haas. And I think Hülkenberg qualified P4 at Haas, but I don't. But so I think the P4 I'm thinking of was Grosjean. Sorry, I misspoke.
Yeah, the only thing is because I saw a picture of Grosjean with Bearman. I don't think it was this weekend, but they were saying P4 for Haas. I'm like, oh, finally
Aw,
they
I love
acknowledge.
it. Well, we mentioned Hülkenberg, but let's talk about Alpine first because I think they had the worst weekend of every team on the track.
They were horrible. They were like 30 seconds behind Lance Stroll, and I'm sorry.
That's terrible. That is
Like
so
Leclerc was 30
unacceptable.
seconds behind Norris, and that was expected, but being
Oof.
30 seconds behind Lance Stroll, that is a, like the only thing I can think of that helped Gasly was that he had qualified Colapinto. He finished ahead of him. And
That
yeah,
is
but there
so
was
not saying much.
the last two cars that finished. Yay.
Yikes. Okay, moving on pretty quickly. Hülkenberg was also another car that had to retire. What was his issue for his retirement? I didn't catch it.
I think he said it was power issues.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But he has something to celebrate because he made it into Q2, and this year, this first of all, he still has never made it to Q3 this year, which is insane because he was in
Well,
Q3 with Haas last year more than once. And he still out qualified Bartoletto. However, Bartoletto managed to go from P16 to P10, so I would say he wins that one.
yeah.
And I think Barilotto's strategy was just the winning strategy was medium to soft, but Yuki Tsunoda was on the same strategy, and he settled for the Ollie Bearman honorary place of P11. By
Dang
the
it,
way,
Yuki.
I have to say one thing about Yuki, and this was not shown on the broadcast, and I can't believe it. He had a 12-second pit stop. Now, can
What?
you believe that Red Bull? They never showed it on the broadcast, but yes, Red Bull performed a 12-second pit stop for Yuki Tsunoda.
What happened? He didn't have a penalty.
They never showed it, so we don't know.
Oh, that's horrendous. I mean,
Like, I'm
it'd be
sure it's.
horrendous to watch a 12-second pit stop, but like, what
I don't know what
is
happened, but
their
the funny
reasoning?
thing, they, of course, didn't provide any, but I just think. Do you remember how, like, this was Red Bull's calling card?
It
They were the
was
first team that
to break
made,
2 seconds.
yeah, to make, not only that, but to make pit stop. So they, at the time, they had a female engineer, and she was the one who created the strategy because she's like, yeah, power unit is not great. Like, we have all these issues, but the one thing we can be the best at was pit stops. And they were the
Oof.
ones who forced the entire field to focus on pit stops. So after all of that, to have a 12-second stop, I'm
That's just
sorry.
insulting to her. Shame on them.
And like I just feel bad for him because like he has so little to look forward to. Really, you had to do. I mean, can you imagine if they did it to Max Verstappen? I cannot. I think none of them would survive. Like I think he would really run over all of them. But poor Yuki. That's why he looks like. If you look at his interview after the race, he looked like it's the end of the world. And I get it.
Well, yeah. Oh, gosh. I saw Hamilton had a slow pit stop. He was like a 3.5 second.
Well, compared to 12, it's fantastic.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on. If you have a penalty, like, let's get that down to two guys.
Well,
Help them out.
Crofty mentioned on the Sky broadcast that the reason for that is so when they wait, however long they wait for the penalty for the
Before
next
they can
five or
touch the
10,
car. Yeah.
yeah, it always leads to longer pit stop because they're so hesitant to touch the car before. Because remember, it happened to Ricardo last
Yeah, it
year.
did. And you get more time. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think they like overly cautious. And again, it's just 1 second. I mean, in the
One and a
grand
half
scheme of things.
sec. I know, but 1.5 seconds
Okay, well,
makes
this he was
a
never going to get
difference.
a two
I
second pit
know.
stop, but yeah,
Could have been nice.
could have been it. Well, so we have quite a few words
Oh,
of
there
wisdom.
were
This time.
so many gems.
Yes. So this is the quote that everyone says. So for those uninitiated, there's this very funny conspiracy theories that Max and Leclerc just love each other. And the fans of that conspiracy theory is called Verstappen, which I don't like. So I call it cutie patootie moments because last year, I believe it was in Brazil, Max kept reviewing how many mistakes Charles was making in the race. And when he was questioned, like, why are you so critical? Or why did you constantly, critique Charles? He said, because he's my cutie patootie. And when, like, of course, they brought it up to Leclerc, he's like, well, I don't know what that means, but I'll take it. So I've been waiting for these cutie patootie moments this year. They've not been happening, but this was
You had to
great.
wait 20 races.
Pretty much. So this was GP saying to Max, there's your man ahead of you. And then he provides more technical detail, which is not that interesting. But the fact that he referred to Leclerc as your man has taken like a life of its own. And I hope both Max and Leclerc like laugh
And
about
laugh
it.
about it.
Yeah, because it's just hilarious. But speaking of GP, he had a like Red Bull were not on point this race. So GP had a moment where he got on the radio with Max, and then I guess he pressed the wrong button or forgot to unpress the button. But you could hear him say, obviously talking to strategist, yeah, so are we on a two one stop or a two stop at the moment? Right, okay. And Max then goes, I can hear everything.
Just what you want to hear from Max.
Right, but he, as usual, after the race, he defended GP saying, oh, well, he just like pressed the wrong buttons and it happens.
They
But
have a good relationship.
they do, but like I always think of GP as such a performing at such a high level as a race engineer. So it was very human to see him make
Well,
this.
but you have to think he's missed a couple of races this year. So I think he's
Yes.
had something going on in his personal life, which you never want to interfere in a race weekend, but he is human, so maybe it did.
Again, it didn't cost Max anything,
No,
but
but
it was just
yeah.
interesting to see.
It was very uncharacteristic of GP.
Very. Oh my God. I mean, I could just go on about George
Russell,
Russell's radios.
give the
It
man an award.
was
I have never heard George Russell so angry at Mercedes.
no, and so
Especially
open.
coming off of his contract negotiation. This is not what I was expecting.
Well, he was very
Spicy?
visibly fr well. He was visibly frustrated because, shocker of shockers, remember how he kept predicting that Antonelli will finish ahead of him? Who knew it was going to be Mexico Grand Prix?
The
So
one race you didn't throw it out there.
no, because I put him on. Po I put Russell on podium.
I know you
That
had
what
him
I
at
get.
P3. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but this did happen. So I think so at that point when he started raging, so remember Max, so he was fourth, Max was fifth. So now Max is ahead of him. And I don't remember exactly the moment it happened, but Antonelli also got ahead of him. So now he's like ra like that builds up the pressure. Plus, I'm sure contract negotiations, frustration had to come out somewhere. So unfortunately, I could not like I did not and I have to say, as much as I in real time, I enjoyed hearing them. He's not as funny as Fernando Alonso when he's raging. However, this was the one that I chuckled at the
Oh,
most.
he's too proper. Like, he's still
Yes.
proper even when he's raging.
So this was the one, the improper one where he got cheeky.
Oh, this one's so good. This one's so
I've
good.
got bleeping McLaren up my ass. Want me to let him pass? And his engineer goes, no, thank you. He goes, I was just checking. So I have to say that was the best radio of the race because
Yes,
it
he
was
wins best
just
radio message of the race by far
that
with
was
that.
so snarky that it was very good. Alex Albon also has been showing a lot of frustration with Williams, and I think it's probably due to that his correct assumption that obviously James Vowles values Carlos Sainz more.
Yes, which I have a theory on this when we get to spill the grid. So,
Okay, hold that.
yes.
So this is what Albon hears. Instruction, we'll switch the cars at turn one. This might be the worst strategy of ever. And then it cuts off because I'm sure he had like expletives galore after that.
I can only imagine.
But can you imagine he's on hard tires yet again and he's asked to switch with his teammate? Like at this
No.
point, I wouldn't be
No
surprised if he
way.
was not a nice guy, he would probably just ram into Sainz and be like, we're both out, just I'm done.
And no one would blame him
Right.
outside of James Vowles.
Yeah. So we have a few sad ones from Lewis Hamilton. So one is about Roscoe. It's actually a very long, very sad quote about how
Aww.
much he misses him, but I think this was very poignant. And someone asked me earlier, you're gonna get another dog? And I'm like, I can't replace him. He's not a car. I can't replace him. I can't just go and get a new one. He was my son. It's just seriously, it's
I
just
know.
so
So
sad. I'm
sad.
so sad. I just love the pictures of him holding Leo, and I hope that brings him some kind of comfort.
I hope so.
So the other thing he said, it was after the race, obviously about his penalty. Ultimately, I feel very let down by the governing body, but it's double standards, as you can tell. It is what it is.
He's not wrong.
He's not, but I have to say, like, I get him. I would actually, if I were him, I would be equally angry at Ferrari. Maybe he can't say it because, apart from them not making Leclerc give up the place, they actually told him the wrong information for why he got the penalty. Because they told him it was because he didn't use the escape route, which he was also, I mean, he was investigated for everything. He was,
Everything under the sun. So maybe they just got confused or thought it was
they
on
couldn't have
something
because
else. But
Crofty, who gets confused all the time,
yeah.
kept it clear that like the
Oh.
FIA clearly said it was for joining the track after going off track and gaining a position.
Well, so F1 commentators made the same mistake then because when I was watching it, they kept showing the clip back from where he went off the access road. And that's what they kept talking about.
Well, he was
So
investigated for that. So that's the
well,
thing. They had
yes,
two investigations.
but I think, I don't know if it's the broadcast or the commentators or where confusion fell. I was hoping you were going to say the one positive one that I saw before the race was when they were doing the press interviews and it was him, Leclerc, and Lando. And they said, you know, Lewis, what's your strategy tomorrow? You're just going to, he goes, I'm feeling racy. He goes, I've got nothing to lose, unlike this guy.
See, I would have included that if he actually ended up
I
on the
know.
podium. I
I
thought it was a
just,
little too mean to include it when it went so wrong for
it was a
him
little
during
salt in
the.
the wound, but I was so optimistic for him.
Yeah,
Freaking
exactly.
stewards.
So speaking of Sue, so Max Verstappen was very philosophical about safety cars. I'm sure Aaron, you'll have a lot to say about that. So
I
that's what
have
he
plenty to
said.
say on this one, but I will
Yeah, so
save
he
it.
said, sometimes you win. And sometimes you lose with safety car. Overall, I think a safety car has generally helped me in my career.
Well, yes,
You
no kidding.
think?
That's how you won your first world championship in 2021. You can thank Michael Massey for that.
That's how he won Brazil 2024. It was a mega drive, but if it wasn't, well, it was actually red flag, same thing. If it wasn't for that, he would not have won either. So a lot of things go in the wrong in the race and help him.
They do. But
Like the
yeah, I'm
only.
still bitter about 21.
It will never be enough, I'm
It will
sure.
never.
But I just like the only circumstances I can remember is Miami 2024 when the safety car picked up the wrong car.
Oh, with Lando. That was the first time it benefited somebody
Yeah.
so egregiously other than Max.
And now, like
Yeah.
literally the only two times I can think that he got a benefit, he got on the wrong side of the safety car.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how many instances of Leclerc getting on the wrong side of safety car. So the one time it actually helped
I
him and
think
he didn't
Lewis
even.
takes the cake because he should officially have an 8-time championship title.
Right, but I feel
I
like
think he's been screwed the most.
he has been, but I almost feel it's not really safety car, it's freaking Michael Massey. Because
Well,
if you
and
follow
apparently
the
the
rule.
stewards, Michael Massey's nowhere near these stewards.
Right, but this is not as egregious.
No, but.
Because the thing is, they were applying to everyone, right? What Massey did, which is so egregious, is that he made a rule that only applied to
He
and screwed
changed.
one driver.
The rule has only been manipulated the one time, and it changed the championship. It has been implemented properly every time since.
Well, to lift the spirits, I have a few of Alonzo quotes, and
Oh, good.
they
He's just
this.
been on a tear on the radio.
And by the way, well, I think one of them is on the radio. I don't think the others are.
Okay.
So this is the one, like both. So the first two things that I'm going to mention, they're both about the lap one incident,
Okay.
meaning with it wasn't just Verstappen and Leclerc going off, Piastri went off, but he rejoined way later than his place. So obviously he suffered. Carlos Sainz went off, which is part of the reasons why he ran into Lawson. Like everyone went off. It's the second time in a row that on the first lap in the first corner, the FIA is looking the other way. So lesson learned. And if anyone learns their lesson, it's Fernando Alonso. The second quote, this one I think is on the radio. I saw the replay on the big screens. Question for race direction. Can I cut turns two and three to pass like they do, or I stay on track better? And this was my favorite
Oh, he's
moment.
so good.
He is good. So this was my favorite moment. So during on Thursday, during media day, people noticed when he took out his phone case that there was a picture of George Russell on it. And there was like the speculation was insane. Like, what does it mean? Are they that close? I mean,
There
they're
was
actually
way too much buzz about this one.
there was
It
more
was a little excessive.
it was, but it was fun. Like
Yeah.
the song. So they showed so they were arriving in the paddock, I think Friday, and Russell was informed that this happened, and so he said when they told him, he's like he couldn't believe this was real. So Fernando shows him the picture, and he says, "My niece took a photo in Miami, and you are unfortunately there." And George Russell says, "I was sure it was fake."
You know, my favorite story about George Russell coming out of this weekend was, did you see on Friday how he actually got to go into the stands in disguise to watch
Yes.
the cars on track? I actually really got a kick out of that.
Well, did you also see that then? I think either, yeah, I think it's Saturday, Alonso put on the same on the mask.
No, I missed that.
Oh my God, all the drivers were dying. And
That's
he like
hysterical.
he pretended to go, but he didn't go.
Yeah.
But it was just very funny. But
That's
that's what I'm
funny.
saying. They actually have a relationship that this all makes sense. So another thing, another person who was commentating for Sky Sports was Jacques Villeneuve. And he said something interesting. This is about the Red Bull situation and racing bulls and who was driving which car. Keep Liam Lawson, then go and take Alex Palou from IndyCar. Perfect future Red Bull driver. Test him out. What do we think?
Paid him to say that.
I don't think they paid him, but remember, Jacques Villeneuve won. I don't know if I think he won the championship and Indy 500 the year before he went into F1, and in his second year he won a World Drivers Championship. So for him, it's easy to go from IndyCar to Formula One.
Maybe. Let's revisit this and spill the grid because I think we get into a little bit of the Red Bull seat
Absolutely.
debate.
So if you were missing the frenemies that are Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon, I got another Frenchie for you, Isaac
Woohoo,
Hadjar.
Hadjar.
So he was raging, not just against Pierre Gasly, but the world during his practice. But this is what he said. Pierre came out of, ki oh, sorry. Pierre, come on, get out of the effing way. Is this guy bleep bleep blind? And I'm like, is this the start of the next French Civil War? Why can't we have two Frenchmen who don't hate each other? It's all we want.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Although Hadjar is getting a little.
Punchy.
Yeah, I was gonna say spicy. Spicy seems to be my word of the day, but yeah, he's getting punchy.
I think it's the pressure of being the next Red Bull driver, which is never a good thing.
Maybe.
Speaking of Red Bull drivers, this was an interesting one for Sergio Perez. There's no driver that can survive there, i.e., Red Bull. It doesn't matter if you bring Hamilton or Leclerc, whoever you bring there is going to struggle massively. Okay, why did he chose those two? And I'm sorry, in so Jacques Villeneuve, oh, he tore, not he wasn't reacting to this quote, he was just reacting to Sergio Perez as a driver. And he was basically implying that as good as he looks now compared to how Yuki performed, and let's not even mention poor Liam, that doesn't mean he's a good driver. Basically, he is a mediocre driver that did as much as he could with what he had. But if he was a better driver, he would have achieved better results. So my point is, taking that logic, since we both of us believe Hamilton and Leclerc is a different league of driver, I'm not saying they're going to beat Max, but I think they were going to do better than Perez in Red Bull second seat. What do you think?
Yeah, but I would say even, well, Daniel Ricciardo was the last really successful driver to be paired with Max in that Red Bull second seat.
But also Max just started, so I don't know how Daniel would have done with this Max.
Right. I don't know. But I mean, all in all,
And I
for a
know we
while,
love.
Sergio did okay until he didn't. And I don't know what they did to the car.
But remember, like in 2023, the car was like the best, the most, the
Yeah.
strongest, way ahead. And he didn't win as many. Like he won like three,
Yeah, but
four.
to win from Max, like,
Well,
you know, I mean, I
but the
don't
thing,
know.
I don't like, to me, Daniel Ricciardo is a little bit overrated as a driver. I mean, I love him as a personality, but I just don't think, like, when you watch Drive to Survive first season, you think he's the best thing ever. But what I'm saying is that's more aura than the actual
I think you have to go
results.
back to years prior to Drive to Survive and look at racing records bef to really get an understanding.
I agree, but he didn't have Max there. That's the problem.
Doesn't matter. I mean, I still think he's a better driver than what we actually got to see performance-wise in Drive to Survive because he changed teams. But
Right.
anyway, regardless, the second seat of Red Bull is a challenge. And I'd say this segues us into spilling the grid because we can talk about some of the rumors and things that are going around. So we had heard prior to Red Bull was going to announce their driver lineup after this race. That has since been scrapped. It's still not clear if Yuki has a chance. Laurent Mekies keeps suggesting it. I don't know if they're waiting for Hadjar Heroics to continue. To Hadjar Heroics to resurface. However, I would not be shocked if Alex Albon moves back into Red Bull.
For 2026?
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting theory. So, by the way, Helmut Marko also said that they now will not announce until after Qatar or Abu Dhabi because they
What?
want to focus on the championship, meaning for Max's championship. I mean, the
I
ship has sailed
mean,
for Red Bull. Right. So,
I think he's just buying time.
sure. I'm not gonna say never to Albon returning to Red Bull, but I honestly don't think he would,
I think
because
it has a lot to do with Thai influence sponsor dollars because they are adding a Grand Prix in Bangkok in 27, 28. And I think there's a lot of influence on that side of the house trying to get him back in.
I'm sure, but what I'm saying is for Albon, if you know next, so. Next year, Red Bull's engine, who knows? It's not,
Right.
I can guarantee you it's not going to be the winning one.
Nope.
And everyone thinks Mercedes is the winning one. Well, guess who has Mercedes engine? Williams.
Yeah, but Albon made it a year and a couple of races with Max. So, compared to the revolving door of second drivers that have been in that seat, he's had the most time with him outside of Perez.
He did, but he was not thriving. And towards the end, he was a shallow version of himself.
Yes, he
And
was not confident. And unfortunately, Hamilton, you know, didn't help him in two races.
No. So I honestly think there's a lot of PTSD. So I don't, again, I'm not saying he's not going to move to Red
I
Bull. I
wonder if
just.
that has anything to do with his performance at Williams, like if there's stressful negotiations going on in the background. Because he seems very distracted. That's my
It's.
Albon theory. I
I think
think
he's
there's,
distracted because Carlos Sainz is doing much better than he did in the beginning. And
Well, they
he.
totally flip-flopped. Yes.
Right. And so I think every time you see, like, for instance, when Piastri was told, hey, you salvaged the fifth, and he's like, who cares if my teammate won?
Right.
So I think they are so focused on beating their teammate that that's where all the frustration comes from.
Well, they definitely are focused on beating their teammate. And McLaren's still expecting them to be friendly. I don't know the right words to come up with McLaren, but we did see that the repercussions that McLaren were imposing on Lando Norris for the rest of 2025 because of his contact with Piastri in Singapore are no longer in place due to Piastri taking Lando out in the Austin sprint.
Yeah, I'm hoping the papaya rules are behind us.
It
Although,
sounds like it until you listen to the pit wall of McLaren and they're asking Norris what to do with Piastri.
that is so stupid. And it's funny, I heard
It's
a take.
embarrassing.
I think it was F1 TV's take that maybe they were making it sound like they're still helping each other.
Oh,
But it makes
God,
no
no.
sense.
That
The
makes no sense.
constructors are
No.
done, and they're each other's closest competitors. So why would
And let
Lando
them
help?
battle it out. Like,
Yeah.
quit with the rules. Let them battle.
Agreed.
Well, back to our favorite radio. A person of the race, George Russell, did clarify the whole multi-year contract with Mercedes. He revealed to the Telegraph that if he, quote unquote, reaches a certain target in 2026, there is a specific clause in his contract that will automatically renew it for 2027. No details were revealed about what this target is. What do you speculate?
Well, that makes sense because again, when the report was that it was a multi-year contract, I got confused because we thought there must have been so many outs.
Right. Target
But
makes sense.
isn't that what 1 plus 1 usually means? Like after a certain
Yeah.
point, the other plus one comes in. So multi-year means two based
Right.
on this. And I think the target, so there were rumors that if he is within if he, the difference between him and Antonelli is like a certain even points or certain placements, that's when it kicks in, and that's believable to me.
Well, especially based on how frustrated Russell was that they did not give team orders to, because he clearly had faster pace than Antonelli. And Toto was, go race him, go
Well,
pass
Toto
him.
wasn't, it wasn't Toto. Toto wasn't even in
Oh,
Mexico.
well,
Yeah, it was
whomever was, go race him, go try to catch him if you got such pace.
Well, the thing is, like, it's almost like they inherited the Ferrari virus because they waited like 5 laps before they had them
They
switch,
waited too long.
which is like, again, with dirty air, except for McLaren, nobody can keep
No
their
one can handle
tires.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why I like when Russell overtook
Apparently, they all
Benelli.
need Sonny Hayes to come in and save the day
Obviously.
and fix that
Well,
problem.
listen, if he crashes, he crashes, right?
Yeah.
So, but when Russell was overtaking Antonelli after he was allowed to, he said, great. Yeah, he was saucy. Like, he just
Oh,
was
he
real.
was on fire.
Right.
And we finally get to dispel a conspiracy theory that was swirling around. Is it really dispel?
It is
Okay.
because I was so
Well,
looking
I
forward
heard
to.
Aston Martin and Mercedes breached.
No. So, yeah. So, there's been. So, it all started. It's so funny because I'm pretty sure it was Sky Italia who really blew this out of proportion. So, there has been a delay in issuing a 2024 F1 budget certificates. And it was definitely Aston Martin that was a team that was identified for a minor breach. Then the rumors began that there was at least one team that had a breach that was more significant, and it has been rumored to be either Mercedes or McLaren, but it was definitely not Ferrari. This is like my first clue that this was like, why do they care about Ferrari, right? Like, the
Right.
speculations are interesting because the whole thing was like, if it's McLaren and it's significant, what is
That
the
would
appropriate penalty? Is it
take
to
away their constructor championship. That
exactly.
would totally change the game.
Yes. So fortunately for all of the teams, the conspiracy theory has been squashed.
Oh, good.
FIA confirmed today that all teams met the cost cap, and even the Aston Martin breach was procedural. So it wasn't
Oh.
even that they basically filed, I don't know, wrong
So
paperwork or indicate.
something got blown out of proportion just to make a news story.
But it's funny that it was like McLaren was the target or Mercedes were
Well,
the
of course
target.
it was, because then it would totally change money values for everybody else and shuffle things around. But
Yeah.
speaking of Ferrari and our drivers, they were listed on Sports Pros Annual's Most Marketable Athletes list. No surprise, Hamilton's number one and Charles Leclerc is number 25.
He has time to make up the difference, but I'm not surprised that Lewis is number one.
I mean, that he just, yeah, not surprised. What I'm not excited about, I'm torn. I should say, shouldn't say not excited. I am torn, but Christian Horner has 1.5 billion pounds ready to buy or start an F1 team.
Well, the only can I give you some comfort?
Yes, please, because there's a limit on the amount of teams that they're allowed on the grid. It's 13, right? And it's really difficult to do this.
Well, the fact that Cadillac had to divest itself of Andretti involvement kind of speaks to how difficult it is. Because basically, if you bring a new team in, you're splitting the pie now 12 ways as
Right.
opposed to 11 ways, which means the 12th team has to prove that it will increase the pie so everyone will actually get more.
Right.
And like, I don't know how Cadillac was able to prove that. I think it helps that it's an American team, so it can say, look, the American market is the
The
fastest
fastest
growing.
growing, there's the,
Yes.
yes, sure.
So with the 12th team, I don't think it's going to fly. So I just don't see that.
I think that is an uphill battle, unless you think Gene Haas is gonna sell.
Currently I don't see it, but I think his
Do we
ultimate
see him
goal.
going back to jail for any crimes?
Yes, you've done fraud
Like
once, you'll do it
going
again.
into
I
administration, like Force India?
don't think he's gonna go bankrupt anytime soon, because it's interesting because Haas makes a lot of parts that all the teams use
Well, that's
in the
true.
cars. But what I was gonna say in terms of comfort is that Christian Horner is very adamant. He needs an ownership stake. So yes, he has these investors, but
And
unless
he's
he's
not
a
going to Ferrari.
yeah, so unless he's giving an ownership, that yes, that is comfort. So I still think Alpine is his best bet.
I do too. I think Alpine would make the most sense for him. We have said that from the get-go.
But I just feel so bad for Pierre Gasly. Just when he's getting finally the engine he deserves, he's gonna get Christian Horner as a team principal.
I think Horner would like him way better than Colapinto.
Do you remember that they tried to get Colapinto into Red Bull? So I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. Oh, I totally forgot about
And
that.
I don't think
Poor
it's Helmut
Pierre.
Marko who constantly puts Colapinto down, so it's got to be a
No.
Christian thing.
Yeah, well, lots of things came out of this weekend, which was great.
Yes. So Mexico City Grand Prix delivered the spice and the sizzles that we always want but rarely get here. The qualifying sessions were electric and scrambled up the starting grid so that there were a lot of cars going into turn one and lap one, knowing that they had to make moves or lose out. The race created exciting on-track action, which has been in short supply in the last few races, memorable radio exchanges, switch up in strategies that kept us guessing until the end, or at least until the virtual safety car, and controversial penalties. The Drivers' Championship finally had a lead change, and the top three drivers are still very close together, so that every race from here on takes a new significance, especially since George Russell is still not out of contention mathematically.
I don't know how.
He finished P7.
I know. How is he still in this?
Well, look, I mean, obviously points,
Yeah, I
differentials.
know, but yikes.
Well, it's so funny because last race, Charles Leclerc ended up on the podium, And he was out of contention. And he
Right.
ends up in P7 and he's still in it mathematically. Like, it's never going to happen. I
Well, I
think.
love how what really irked me the most out of Russell's radio messages was there's a Haas and a Ferrari ahead. We can definitely focus on a podium. I was not real thrilled with that.
True.
Yeah,
I
that, yeah.
like there's like
There's
I
that.
can't defend him for that.
Yeah. Okay.
So I mean he's right about Haas. But so I hope he remembers this fact that he's still in contention and tones down the radio rages, although they are very enjoyable, except when he brings up Ferrari. We are now coming to the race in Brazil that promises to build on the Mexico momentum, create drives for the ages, and also give us more racing since it's going to be a sprint weekend as well.
Oh, I cannot wait. A sprint in Brazil. That's going to be exciting. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
Would also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your lovable rule-pushing racer. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.